This is le podcast on emerging leadership. I am Alexis Monvel. Individuals and companies invest years in building their reputations. It happens that at a time, one thing could dramatically damage it. Laurence Duarte is a global management consultant. She is a business fixer. She helps you to protect and grow your business. She is also a business writer, a regular contributor to the Harvard Business Review. She worked all over the world, especially in Europe, China, and the US. Hey, Laurence, what is your role and how would you describe it to someone you just met?
So thank you, Exi, for this question. My role, I like to define myself as a business fixer. So most of the time, my clients, they call me when they don't know what to do. And so my job is to help them to protect their company and to grow. And sometimes we need fresh eyes, and that's why I am here. So yes, I think this is how I like to define myself, as a business fixer and as also a protector. You know, I like to protect business. That's why for the last 6 years, I developed an expertise in criminal risk and how to protect the most important assets of a company. The most important assets of any companies are property, people. I should have started by people. Of course, it's people first. After you have properties, you have a proprietary information and, of course, reputation. I think it's why we are there today to talk about reputation.
Yeah, so tell me more about that. Why is corporate reputation really important?
Because it's what will define as a willingness to your consumer, but also your investors, your employees to work with you, to buy from you. It's how they perceive you. And so that's why it's so important. Reputation, it's how they will, their willingness to work with you.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more, what is reputation and what difference you make between the brand and the reputation?
Yes. Thank you for this question, because most of the time the issue comes from this. We think that reputation, we own reputation, and actually we don't own reputation. We own brand. It's us. It's like you, Alexi, you are Alexi. And what people think about you, it's your reputation. And this is what it's a perception. And so that's why we don't all own reputation. That's why it's sometimes very difficult for people. And that's why they don't really want to talk about reputation. You know, they wait for to meet reputation in a bad situation. And suddenly it's like, oh my goodness, I have a reputation. But most of the time it's a little bit too late, because it's very difficult to grasp and to control. And we know how much we love to control things, especially in the business field. But fortunately, there are ways to understand, to monitor, and in a way to, I would say not control, but at least to protect from reputational risks. Because reputation has so much impact in a company. The first thing that most of the time we think about reputation at reputation equity. When you have a crisis, it will be some kind of a goodwill and it will act as a buffer. So you have a crisis and suddenly, because you have a good reputation, it will help you to recover far more quickly. But it's not only about that. As I said, it will help you to attract a better employee. It will help you to achieve premium prices, you know, to retain higher customer loyalty, and also to have better market value, you know. And also, which can be a really huge advantage, it will help you with the credibility of your communication. So see, when you talk about good reputation, it's like you are welcome everywhere. And it's really something that is, it matters a lot.
Yeah, let's take examples with that. So I would like to pick two examples and tell you how I felt about those company and their reputation. Mm-hmm. And you can help us with that. So when Facebook
we heard about what they did to help help manipulate elections. That's what that's my understanding of it. I closed my Facebook account and I said, okay, I don't want to have anything to do with that company anymore. I'm not saying it's rational. That's what I felt. That's what I did. Oh, that's what happened. Now, when Spotify, more recently, there was all that discussion around Spotify and what they were doing and what they were not doing, I realized that I was in a conversation with friends and I was advocating for Spotify. And I was thinking, that's really interesting. What is going on there? What is happening? Is it that reputation equity that you're talking about?
Yes, so thank you for sharing these two examples and to see how much you are, I would say, a conscious consumer. You just, and you are not the only one, more and more you have a change in the culture and the society because of impaired transparency, the fact that now we know everything very quickly. And suddenly, we have to, if the company is not able to make a clear choice, we will make the choice. And in terms of Facebook, it's exactly what you decided to do. You decided, no, I don't want to put some money in a way. Even if it's free, we know that they use our data, so it's not free. And you decided to close. For Spotify, it's another example, and it's a tricky one. Because reputation works at several levels. It's also, it's like how you like the company. And it's like being in love. So if you are just in love for 2 days, it will be easy to drop. But if you have been in love for a long time, it will be, of course, more difficult to drop. I have the same issue with Spotify like you. It's like I was thinking, oh, I should stop because I don't like what they do. But I am so used to Spotify, so I feel that I don't know what to do. Is it easy to switch to another company? And it's really where we stand as a consumer with our consciousness and also with our activism. And it's exactly what the company needs to monitor, where we stand. And that's why it's very important to know one part of understanding our, how I can say it, risk exposure. It's like you have to understand what is going on in the society. And so it's good to see the expectation of your consumer and how it changed over time, as well as knowing the outrage. Most of the time we think that it's not our concern, like outrage, like we have Me Too movement, we have Black Lives Matter, we have climate use movement, you know. And so it's like movement. You can't say that you haven't seen them coming. So, of course, like for Spotify, they knew that at some point it will come. And so if they have this type of very harmful content, violent content for many people, they have to do something about it. And so if they don't know, if they don't do something about it, suddenly it's our responsibility. And I am not sure that we really like to take this responsibility because we buy a service and we don't want to have more description from this service about our ethical behavior.
Mm-hmm. So companies can work on that, and companies and individuals can work on that to look at their reputational risk.
Yeah.
Okay. What are those determinants of the reputational risk?
Alors, the reputation risk, first, one of the main things, it's like you need to check your what we call the reputational gap. And it's like, as I like to define that as is if your true character exceed your reputation or your reputation. It's like too much love or too much hate. High expectation or a lower expectation. And at some point it has to, you know, it's like the two polarities. And so you need to be sure that what the people are expecting for you, it's what you can offer. And so it's not, if it's not the case, and sometimes we may think, oh, they really love us so much. And so this is good. No, it might be not good because if it's not the reality, at some point, they will feel betrayed. And if consumers, they feel betrayed, especially the most supportive one. You know, there is no comeback from that. The backlash is far more violent from this type of consumer. So this is the first thing. It's what we call the reputational gap. Then there is another thing that you have to check. It's like a criminal attack, because it's how your reputation can be harmed as well. So if you have cyber attack, if you have a counterfeiting product, if you have a toxic environment, it will create a lot of bad condition to create, in a way, reputational risks. So it's the same. It's necessary to be seen. Then, as we talk already, it's important to check as well the change in the belief of your consumer, you know, and what they want from you. Before, we wanted just to have a product that works well. That's it. Now we want a product that is guilt-free, and that it has to work well, it has to feel right. It's exactly what happened with, in a way, Facebook and Spotify. You don't want to use or to buy products that can harm the planet, that can other people. So it's what are the most important things to check. And of course, it's also important to see what people are thinking about you in terms of stakeholders. It's not just about your consumer. It's also about the media, the social media. It's also about the government, the regulators, the NGOs. They can be really good signs, kind of, even if most of the time we think that NGOs are like really, they bother. But actually, they are not, you know, because they will show you where you have to work. Mm-hmm. In order to build up and protect your reputation.
This is really interesting that you look at all the stakeholders. I can already imagine that we can draw an impact map looking at all the stakeholders. Do you include in that analysis of the reputational risk the employees themselves of the company?
Oh, yes. Employees are very, very, very important. And you can see, you know, it's like all the... It's like tons of little weak signals, you know. It starts always by small signals. And it's like, are you able to catch them before it's too late or not? So when you are able to catch them, and employees are very important. Of course, we have an issue. For example, it's what we call the reputation company bias. So if you are in a company that is most of the time very aggressive, very competitive, and they don't allow failures, they will hide a lot of things. So it will be always, everything is okay, everything is all right, I am working for the best of the company, da-da-di-da-da-da. The problem with that, it's like, it's not the case. Most of the time, it's not the case. We always have some issue here and there. And the fact that we can't see it, it's like you protect toxic environment, you protect failures, you protect mistakes. And missteps, management missteps. And at some point, it becomes too loud. And as we know, a company is not a black box, it's a glass box, so everyone can see inside the company. But it's too late. It's too late. That's why it's important to check and to create a healthy culture in a company. Because as I say, employees are the first reputation shield. When you have a crisis, you know, they will be the first to protect the company. So it's better to have a healthy culture in a company, because it will help you at so many levels.
This is really fascinating. So I'm really interested in looking at that gap, that the gap between reputation and reality. And mm-hmm. If I take that from an employee standpoint, I remembered working with a company as a consultant where the, I have an example in my mind, where there was on the walls really inspiring statement about mm-hmm. Transparency and great, really great values. But when you were looking at the people, they were all in a way scared. They were already, you could see they were managed under high pressure and a lot of fear. So it was completely disconnected with what was written on the walls. That's those kind of gap between what the company wants to say and the reality?
Yes. I mean, how you build trust. I like that because trust is also another major reputational shield. But trust, you know, you don't buy trust. You have to prove trust. And so you don't have to have a gap between what you say and what you do. And it's very important to know that. And I think it depends of the true character of people. But of course, it starts with people. You know, a company is nothing without these people, their people. And so it's unfortunate that I like to call that posture/imposture. It's like, you know, you have all these bright things, you all these bright comment, all this beautiful communication. And suddenly you have a crisis or suddenly something happened and you can really see that actually it was just like an imposture and there is nothing, you know, it was just empty words. And we can't have now in our society during this time people with just empty words. It will not work. You know, you will be called out. And of course, for you as a consultant, you have seen that. Because you saw the discrepancy between what was written in the wall and the reality of the leadership and the management. And it's very unfortunate because it creates a lot of damage in terms of leadership. And this is not good.
So that's not only what you say. That's, of course, what you do. But it's also what people expect from you.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's like, that's why you have to be sure that you know your consumer, you know your stakeholders, you know what is going on in the society because it changed. So that's why it's sometimes people say, oh, I am doing all the right things, so it's enough. It's not enough. You also have to create some kind of environment that is able to see what is going on. In order to adapt. That's why I think most of the time people think about reputation risk and the management about as a cost. It can be also a very good competitive advantage, you know, because you know what is going on, you have a lot of data, a lot of intelligence, and if you are able to understand and to see the issue before your competitor in a way, and to add that in your strategy, in order to fix and to develop, you will protect but also grow your business far better and in a far more sustainable way than others that didn't do the same type of work. So it's like strategy seeking as well as situational awareness. You know, it's both of the two that needs to be implemented.
You mentioned it just before and also in your latest report. You talk about reputation shields in companies. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes, I found that we need... So, it's, of course, as I said, you need to implement anticipatory issue management. This is very important. You know, you have to see and to anticipate, evaluate and monitor the risk. And then you also have to have the what I call the reputation shield. And there are two that are the same for everybody, the people, your culture, that will work as a very good reputational shield when you have some crisis. Plus, it will help to... What I noticed studying all the criminal risk, it's like it comes from people. So if you have a good culture and your employee will protect you, will protect your business. And then trust. You know, you need to build trust. You need to build transparency. You need to have at every step of your company people who say, okay, I say that, I do that. And I prove, and you can see, you can verify that I did it, you know. So this is very important. And then it will adapt, you know, of course, sustainability, it's very important. It's another reputational shield. And in my latest report, because it was the beauty industry, I also said that the fact that you communicate a definition of beauty that is non-competitive, non-hierarchical, non-violent is a very good reputational shield because it's what the women consumer want and it's what they need. And they will call out if you don't do that more and more. So.
This is really, really interesting. That means all your relationship with all your stakeholders, including, of course, your employees.
Yeah.
That's the shield that you can build. And that will protect you in case of crisis. And that's not only the convenience of having a job or using a service. That's really building that shield over time. That will really protect you, right?
Yes. And as well as I think what is the most important things for people who listen to this podcast, it's like they need to see as leader that everyone has a responsibility in the reputation of their company. Most of the time, what I have seen is like, we think that reputation belongs to communication. It belongs to the legal affair. But actually, it's not the case. You know, everyone has a say and has a responsibility. Even the people who are in charge of the supply chain, for example, they have a responsibility because when you build a global supply chain, you know, it's the same. You will have some, you will have to choose some countries, and you have some countries that might be better in terms of rentability, but might be a big risk in terms of reputation. And so that's why I really think that everyone has to be aware and understand their role in the reputation building, you know.
Excellent. And so you work with CEOs and leadership team to help them manage that reputation shield?
Yes. The thing is like, the first thing is to understand what is reputation, then to implement a framework to be able to monitor the reputation and to see the risk, to understand the risk and to mitigate them. Of course, to prepare when you have some crisis, because, I mean, you always have some crisis, especially in big company, it can happen. And to build reputation shield, you know. So it's a lot of awareness that I developing with CEO and the leadership team around this issue. Because what people tend to forget, it's like 90% of the market is made by intangible assets that brands. And so you can imagine the damage of crisis, of scandal, the disruption, the loss of market value when you are hit by a scandal. And so suddenly you suffer from a bad reputation.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. And speaking of leadership and helping leaders, you worked with a lot of leaders. And among those you admire, what's the one trait that stands out to you, and how is that trait important to you in the way you see leadership?
I would say self-awareness. I really think that it's the base of the base. You know, you can't be a good leader if you don't know what is happening inside you, because what is happening inside you will drive your decision. And sometimes you will have good decision or bad decision. And I have seen that so many times with CEO at a big company. And suddenly, it's not suddenly actually, because of their success. And I always think that in success, you have the seed of failure. So mm-hmm. If you are not able to see and to continue to ask some question like why? And to avoid as much as you can the blame and self-pity when bad things happen. And so for that, you need to be self-aware. You need to ask a question from the inside. What is happening inside? What are my drivers? How do I feel about this and that? And to be able to take a step back and to think and to see what is at play. I think we take far more better decision, and we realize that our actions have always consequences. And that's why, I mean, it's strategy seeking in a way. So, but it's very important. And I think it goes far better, far beyond that skills, you know. I think self-awareness, it's very important because it's a source. And when you have this source after, you know, you will have authenticity, you have integrity, you will have honesty, you will have courage, and so on.
Beautiful. Tell us one action you've taken in the past to develop yourself as a leader, and what did you learn from that?
I think self-awareness. I think it's always important to see what's going on. So my action has been to work around that, you know, to learn, to read book about what is happening inside, to understand more about emotion, you know, where they come from. For example, shame, guilt, fears, and the checking. I found embodiment movement very interesting. It's like suddenly you realize that you have a body, and so the body has some information for you. And most of the time we cut from the body. And I think it's very interesting to see, oh, I am feeling fear at the moment. Why? And so it helps to balance, and it helps also to be more conscious as a leader. It raises the level of consciousness. So, and I think when we raise the level of consciousness, we take better action, and I think we are more free. And so I think happier.
Really interesting. And I guess a lot of food for thought there. I assume people will think about that pain in their back or in their neck in a different way now. Thank you for having joined me on the podcast today, Laurence.
Thank you very much, Alec.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Le Podcast. Go to alexis.bonville.com for the references mentioned in the episode, and to find more help to increase your impact and satisfaction at work. Drop a comment or an email with your feedback, or just to say hello. And until next time, to find better ways of changing your team.